America weekend.
This.
We're back.
We're back.
We're back. It's Roland Smith along with my good friend Carl Sabatino. But Carl,
peas
you know,
and carrots.
we have an interesting guest online,
yes, we do.
A gentleman that you have talked to that I'm really interested in hearing. His name is Dr. Michael Schmidt. He's the lead PhD researcher on the copper study and a professor of microbiology at the Medical University of South Carolina. And we're talking about the medicinal uses, basically, of copper.
Dr. Schmidt, how are you?
I'm doing well today.
What I would like to do to start off this interview is I'm going to read something very quickly, and that'll give our listeners in the audience a very quick catch-up on all of this, those who are not familiar with what we're about to discuss. This is a study. The results of this particular study on copper alloys that appeared last July in the Journal of Clinical Microbiology found that antimicrobial copper can continuously kill 83% of bacteria that cause healthcare-acquired infections in hospitals within 2 hours, including strains resistant to antibiotics. I assume you agree with that statement.
It's spot on.
Tell us a bit about your research and the whole question of antimicrobial copper.
Well, today I'm going to describe a problem that many of your listeners have never thought of, but they likely have someone in their family or they're acquainted with someone who has actually acquired an infection in a hospital. And should you get an infection in a hospital, you have a really high likelihood of dying from that infection. To really place it into a perspective that everyone can relate to, if one full wide-body jet was lost each day, every day for the foreseeable future, would anyone fly? And of course, everyone says, no, if a plane's crashing each day, I'm not going to get on a plane. And the general public would be clamoring for the aircraft manufacturers, the airlines, to figure out why these planes were crashing. And yet, this is precisely the number of Americans that die each day, every day, year in and year out from hospital-associated infections, one jumbo jet's worth. And unfortunately, HAIs kill more individuals in the United States than HIV and breast cancer combined. So this is how I came to this problem, looking at these frightening statistics. When you encounter the loved one of an individual who has passed because of an HAI, they all stand around the bed asking but one question of the healthcare team, why? And so the healthcare providers all stand around with our hands in our pockets, effectively commiserating with the loved one, saying, if only mom got here sooner, if only we had better drugs, if only she wasn't so sick. And all of these things, if only, are just lame answers. And so my colleagues and I here at the Medical University, along with individuals at Memorial Sloan Kettering in New York, along with my good friends at the Ralph H. Johnson VA Medical Center here in Charleston, we all set out to answer a very simple question. Would this old metal, copper, that's been around literally since the Bronze Age, have the ability to limit the acquisition of a hospital-associated infection? And to make the long story short, the answer was yes. When we placed a limited amount of copper in the built environment, so we literally replaced plastic bed rails with copper bed rails, and we asked the question in patients that were treated in rooms with these copper surfaces, in contrast to patients treated in rooms without copper surfaces, what was the acquisition rate? And we learned that people treated in rooms with these copper objects had a 58% less likelihood of acquiring an infection. 58% is a big number. You don't need to be a fancy statistician to appreciate that this is real. And we looked at this in our intensive care units at the three respective hospitals, and it worked in all three places. This isn't fancy math or anything mysterious. Copper worked. And copper is an old observation that humans discovered very early on in our use of metals. We learned about 5,000 years ago that if you pulled water from the river, streams, or wells and allowed it to sit in a copper vessel, our children wouldn't die. And this empiric knowledge was passed down from mother to daughter simply because water gathering was a function of women of the time, and the mothers passed this down to their daughters so that their daughters' children would not die. And so we took something that was old and made it new. And so this is why it's so exciting that we can actually attack a problem that's killing at least 100,000 Americans each year. But more importantly, this is not a problem unique to America. This is a global problem.
Yeah, Dr. Schmidt, what is it about copper that basically kills the microbes that cause staph infections?
Well, this is where it gets into modern science, and it's really, we all know that copper is a tremendous conductor of electricity. And the energy currency of all living cells are electrons, the same stuff that flows out of the wall to power our electronics, literally powers microbes and powers ourselves. And so the copper has this strong attraction for this electrical energy that's inherent in the microbe, and it literally sucks the juice right out of the bug, and the bug is dead. Once the electrons have flown out of the microbe, they go into an electrical deficit, and the normal act of metabolism generates free radicals, which I'm certain many of your listeners hear about. We all hear about the dangers of free radicals and premature aging and all of those other things. But free radicals actually destroy nucleic acid, or the DNA of cells, and it literally destroys the bacterium by a number of independent mechanisms. It pokes a hole in the cell wall, and the contents leak out. It pokes a hole in the membrane. It then also destroys the DNA. So it's a multifactorial process that kills the microbe. And it's indiscriminate as to the type of microbe, because all living microbes use electrons to generate energy.
Dr. Schmidt, practical application. I understand clearly where we are here, and your explanation, by the way, was spot on. But practical application, putting this in hospitals, doable, reasonable, affordable?
It's certainly doable. We have the technology. We know how to bend metal for well over 5,000 years. There are a number of companies that have actually stepped up to the plate. When we were doing the study, when we started in 2008, you can well imagine me, Mike the scientist, calling up you, the company, and say, would you please make for me 10? I needed 10 of something, and I got laughed at many times. And I was a persistent soul and was able to get them to make me bed rails. And what I did is I literally took the rails off of the beds that we had in our hospital. I purchased the same rail, and then I took it to a coppersmith and had them put a copper sleeve on top of the rail to effectively make a copper rail. Right now, I'm out groveling to the bed manufacturers of the United States, begging them to please engineer this so I don't have to send it out for a custom job. And that's what will actually drive down the cost. Once American ingenuity gets involved, and we begin to manufacture these on a large scale, it's anticipated, because copper is a durable metal. You probably have that jar of pennies sitting in your closet, and it hasn't rotted, it hasn't degraded, and it hasn't disappeared. And so copper is a durable material, won't wear out. And when you do the math and you look at the price of stuff in hospitals, it will really cost to apply copper in a effective manner, literally the price of what we're currently paying for disposable pillows.
Dr. Schmidt, does the thickness of the copper make any difference?
No. The thickness of the copper doesn't make any difference in terms of its antimicrobial activity. What thickness does is it adds to its durability, whether or not it's dented. Some folks may know that copper is a relatively soft metal, and there are a number of metallurgists out there that have alloyed it with other metals like nickel or zinc, and those actually add to the strength of the copper and actually give it remarkable properties so that it doesn't tarnish as quickly. And copper works regardless of what color it is, whether it's that green that we see on copper roofs or whether it's that bright, shiny penny color that we see that comes straight out of our mint.
That's fascinating. Absolutely fascinating.
Yeah, I'm wondering, could we keep Dr. Schmidt over for the next segment?
Let's grab him into the next segment. We're going to continue this on because that's fascinating. And I can think of applications also in schools. I'd like to talk a bit about that.
Yeah, Dr. Schmidt, I want to ask you when we come back about whether did you have to get around the copper bracelet stigma that seems, the people used to wear for arthritis and things of that nature. And we'll do so when Carl brings us back in just about a few minutes.
Yes, and I promise to bring you back. Carl Sabatino with Roland Smith. This is Smith Sabatino. Please stay with us. We're back.
America Weekend.
Welcome to American Biker Minute. Rising from the ashes of poor management and hard times, the 70s and 80s problems and triumph were a lot like what was going on at the same time at Harley-Davidson. Today on American Biker Minute, brought to you by Dish Network. $24.99 a month for a year with free installation, free HD for life, and free HD video recorder. Order now, get a free premium channel for 3 months. 800-241-9495. Jeff Ryan for American Biker Minute. Harley and Triumph during the 70s and 80s. Persistent problems like leaks, carburetor issues, and electrical failure killed sales. Union and management turmoil didn't help. In the 80s, the old Triumph factory and tools were bought out and Triumph mimicked Japanese-style building, which went pretty well until the economic crash of 2008. Motorcycle sales were cut in half and Triumph's business model was broken. Tomorrow's ABM, Triumph's amazing comeback. American Biker Minute, your passport to the open road on two wheels.
Where are they now with Ahmad Rashad?
This receiver is the Broncos' all-time leader in receptions, receiving yards, and touchdown catches. He had a huge game in Super Bowl 33 with 152 receiving yards.
Loads it up, throws down deep the middle of the field. Rod Smith got it! 30, 20, 15, 10, Denver touchdown!
So where is Rod Smith now? Today, Rod's all about coffee and kids. Rod's involvement with the Boys and Girls Club has continued since his playing days, and Rod found a passion for healthy coffee. He's built a large group of OrganoGold representatives in Denver.
Coffee business is awesome. I light up every time I hear about it.
Looks like Rod's going after the coffee business the same way he went after John Elway's passes. I'm Ahmad Rashad.
Tired of high cable bills? Disable the cable with MyTV. Get more of your favorite channels in 100% digital quality for less money. With packages as low as $19.99 for 4 rooms, you can't go wrong. 888-759-MYTV.